ladies and gentlemen. We are recording tonight on All Hallows Eve, October 31st. You'll be hearing this after the fact, of course, but I'd just like to wish everybody a safe and happy Halloween, or in other words, I hope you had one, and I hope everybody didn't get too much of a sugar high on all the candy they got.
Or the terrible crash afterwards. The high is
yes,
good.
Yeah. The crash high is good. Worry about. It's the sugar, the sugar crash, the carb slump afterwards. This is Deadite Bites, and tonight we're discussing Ash vs. Evil Dead, Season 2, Episode 5, entitled Confinement. This is a No Ship Network podcast. I'm your host, Steve.
I'm your host, Paul.
And I am your host, Em. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/noship. Over 180,000 titles to choose from your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
And in case you guys didn't know or maybe have forgotten, we do have an Amazon link. So out of all the ways that you can support us, one way is to go to Amazon, click on our link first, then go to Amazon, and then shop like you usually do. It helps us out. We get a little bit of a kickback, but it doesn't cost you a cent extra, and it's just a nifty way to help out No Ship.
Exactly, without costing you anything. It's wonderful.
They call it the win-win. Because you know you're going to Amazon anyway. Everybody goes to Amazon. As I said before, this episode is entitled Confinement. Here we are at the midway point of the season. Let's get you guys' first takes on this. What'd you think?
It was an interesting episode. I guess it's what you call a bottle episode, where it's confined. And well, it's called confinement. So, but it's all in one space for the most part in the jail. It starts, you know, at the Pink Fuck Bar. I can't remember what that place was called.
The Lounge.
Well, I thought Ball was creepy. He reminds me of Malcolm McDowell a little bit. And I looked him up to see if he was, you know, related to him, but he's not. He was actually in Sons of Anarchy. He was in Spartacus. He played Pompey. So you only saw him like briefly.
Who was he in Sons?
Donnie. I don't know if he was one of the Irish guys.
That could be. That could be.
Huh. That's what I thought, because she said that he was in Sons of Anarchy, and I was like, he doesn't seem familiar. He wasn't one of the Reaper crew, or if he was, he was like really peripheral, like one of their other
pool
chapters.
Player number four or something.
Yeah.
He was also a Lork lieutenant, or Lork. He was an Orc lieutenant in Lord of the Rings.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. So he has no problem with makeup and stuff. So that's good.
And he was in Xena. He played Lucifer.
I enjoyed it. It felt like a little horror movie all wrapped up into one. You know, I liked it when he cut the girl's skin off and put it on. It was a fun episode for me. I really enjoyed it.
I liked it a lot because it really shows you that this show knows how to play in its zone. Stay in its lane or whatever other cliches you can think of to pile on top of that. It is what it is, and it just does it so well. It doesn't try to be something that it's not, so that because I'm watching some other shows, and I'm going to let them remain nameless, that need to commit to something, and they're not necessarily doing it. And I kind of feel wishy-washy about that, and I'm not really going to be in love with the show until they do it. But at any rate, I love Ash vs. Evil Dead for the very reason that it understands what it is, and it's not afraid to be that.
Right.
And the humor in this episode was great because it came at unexpected moments, truly unexpected moments. Like the part where he's taking Linda out of the cell and she just beams her head on the door. I mean, it's complete Three Stooges kind of stuff, but you're not expecting that. It's a genuine surprise when that kind of humor happens. So,
especially with her character, because you would expect that to happen with Chet, but not Linda.
Exactly.
So that makes it even funnier.
There's a few like minor little nitpicky things that might even be rectified in the next episode that I was just kind of after the second or third watch, I was like, hey, what's going on with that?
Like what?
The sheriff's deputy that helped arrest Ash at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
Where's that guy?
He's out cleaning up bodies.
He wasn't at, I guess so. Yeah, that's what we have to assume because he wasn't at the police station. Hmm. You know, he wasn't helping Polly or Margie. So what was he doing? Where did he go?
He's off.
What's that?
He's off.
Yeah, he's off. Yeah, he clocked out. He went fuck home.
He's day shift.
Exactly.
All right, so let's get right into it.
Well, do we do our Metal Mic quotes?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right, Metal Mic quote of the week. Paul, you want to go first?
Yeah, I'm torn between two. First one is, don't worry, Chet, I'll send you a fruitcake, which was pretty slick. You know, Ash has never been known for being nice to people, especially if they're different in any kind of way. And then I like, oh, I got 8, but I can make it feel like 5. Which was just hilarious.
I also like Chet's response to the fruitcake because he's just like, okay, what?
Yeah, like, hey, wait.
My Metal Mike quote of the week is, how do we deal with this Bill guy? Because I can't stop thinking about pancakes. Then everyone's like, Ball.
Mine is when the lady cop's skin got thrown on him and he's all, what do you got, huh? What do you got? When he's tussling with it.
All right, so let's get to the meat of this episode.
Oh, boom.
This was directed by Michael Bassett, written by William Brommel, and it is produced by the Three Stooges, as usual. So we start out with Deputy Marjorie entering the destroyed lounge, and she hears Ball whisper to her. And then finally, you know, she makes her way to the bathroom and everything, and he makes himself known and seen, and then he just kind of seduces her from afar, gets her to start unbuttoning the shirt and all that other stuff, and then we get the slit down the back, and we have Buffalo Ball. Did you catch that? So... You knew this was going to be a cool episode. Well, I know every episode is going to be cool. It's Ash versus Evil Dead. But what telegraphed it to me was you see her skinless kind of fall down, and then the skin just goes,
kind of
plops over, and he's like, I'm not done with you yet. And then they splash to credits. All right, so first impressions of Ball.
I like him. I mean, I kind of like that they didn't make him super crazy menacing, that he's kind of like a scorned nerd or something. You know, he's got kind of like that. It's a fitting way to do a major demon, in my opinion. You know, and that might not be his original form either, though. He might just be taking a human-looking form.
I thought he was creepy in the first scene you meet him. And then later on, you see him smile, and he doesn't look as creepy. There's something about his smile that's not creepy. It's more goofy. But
he's got that young Brad Dourif vibe going on, mm-hmm. which works for anybody.
And crossed with Malcolm McDowell.
With Malcolm McDowell.
He's got Malcolm McDowell's eyes for sure.
And so what's the significance of a character like this? This is a first for the Evil Dead franchise. We haven't had a person be like this, you know, or the embodiment of a demon. So we haven't had something this powerful that Ash is going to have to go up against. So this is definitely going to be the big bad for the rest of the season, if not even further than that.
How do you compete with something seductive like that, that he can do it without any effort?
Yeah, and it's super strong. He's got the power, supernatural powers of a demon.
And he's, like, disdainful of it. I mean, he doesn't even use it to achieve an end besides kill people. I mean...
He uses it as a tool. That's why it's ballsy of them to make it a kind of a nerdy man.
Ballsy.
And not just... It would have been easy to make this demon a hot woman. You know what I mean? And then use the sex. It's that he's using it as an ends to a means. You know what I'm saying? It's not too overboard, and he's just using it to fuck with everybody. So the seduction factor is just a tool, kind of like Ash's shotgun. You know, that's why Ruby's so scared of him. She knows she can't resist it.
Yeah, which is interesting because we get some hints that she's wasn't always mortal. So
I guess he has an
effect on anybody, human and otherwise.
I think the whole mortality thing is a recent development, because in the first season, she went right into that fire with that deadite.
She made a deal down there, and she lost her immortality, I bet.
Yep. That's a good point.
That is a good point. All right. So we cut to Ash, and he's singing, obviously still in victory mode from the end of last episode. And once again, I've saved the world. Now it's time to get the girl, singing about getting the car and going back to Jacksonville and something that rhymes with Jacksonville. And he sees, I don't know, is he looking at the shirt or the fucking goofy ass hat in that store window? And, you know, he decides, I realized that you were one of the only Lindas for me. And I rev up the chainsaw. Yeah, it's going to work.
He's looking at the mannequin and he's pretending it's Linda.
I thought he was looking. I thought he was looking at what was on the mannequin.
Sense.
Like if I bought that, I could put it on and talk to her. No,
I think he was. I like M's explanation on it.
He was practicing.
Well, lots of shit goes over my head, so it's good that you guys catch it. Well, you know, just make sure she tidies up. I just did not. That was not sinking in.
Or Rummy.
Or Rummy playing the game. Rummy, yeah. Rub that in. he's ready to go back, head back to Jacksonville, but Sheriff Emery has other plans, and him and the disappearing deputy rough him up and take him back to the station. And Ash is busted for the murder of Amber Corey and thrown in lockup. It's okay, though, because his buddy Chet is also in residence for drunk driving and soliciting a prostitute again. So both Chet and the deep-voiced Joni are itchy. Yay.
Yeah, that was funny.
How you doing, Chet? Itchy, too.
I like the look on Ash's face when it dawns on him. He's like, oh.
Okay.
And I like how they do that, because I've noticed they've done that before, and I can't recall exact examples from other episodes, but later when Ball's wearing the skin, he gets itchy, you know what I mean? And then you've got this recurrence of a rash being talked about, people putting antifungal cream on their balls, and now you've got Ash talking about, I've had rashes before, that's just a rash, Pablo, you know? So it seems like they do this recall that's really subtle, but it's
funny. It threads through the episode. I wonder if that's kind of like TV episodes 101, and that happens a lot in television episodes, and you're not really supposed to notice it. It's almost like a subconscious level mm-hmm. thing, to where it lets your brain connect the dots of the storyline a little bit easier.
I don't know.
So Margie/Ball takes Ash's weapon to the evidence locker as Lacey and Linda enter the station. And here I just wanted to mention that the director is doing something that we haven't seen in any of these episodes, and it's pretty cool. Every now and then, every couple of scenes, you get a shot from the video cameras that's showing what's going on. And it's not always super significant, but it changes the point of view a little bit. And I almost wonder if they're trying to give you like what Ball is looking at, or mm-hmm. like some sort of overview of all of the action.
Yeah, if he can access the phone, he could probably access other...
Yeah, we don't know his powers yet.
Yeah.
We just have to assume he can do what he wants.
So it gives him that omnipresent ability.
Mm-hmm.
So Margie Ball disgustingly scratches her skin, like we were just talking about, and it moves all over, and it's like, yeah.
That's a great effect.
It kind of reminds me of the first Men in Black, when he was the guy that was, he was actually an insect, but he was wearing the guy, and he's all sugar. Give me sugar.
Yeah, sugar.
So she lets Ash out, and Ash is being his normal asshole self, and she's just going along with it. And he's like, all right, things are finally starting to go my way. So he goes to make his phone call, and this is when you get the really great quote. You got 5, sugar. Oh, I've got 8, but I know how to make it feel like 5. Now, who would say that? Why?
Ash.
It's like you might say, I've got 5, but I know how to make it feel like 8.
Uh-huh.
That makes sense coming from that angle, but it's like, what?
It's that little bit of truth that slips out with Ash.
So the dead phone rings, and Ball taunts Ash. They call you Jefe. Let's see what you're made of. So Pablo, Ruby, and Kelly now show up at the station looking for Ash, and Kelly starts in right away. Howdy, cowboy. Keeping dry?
Shit.
So Linda tries to, you know, because what's going on here? What happened? And he's about to explain. But then Ash comes in and starts discussing bad juju and what to do about it. And so Emery starts waving his gun around because he's a dickhead and he doesn't understand what's going on. But at this point, you can kind of see where he's coming from, because he is the sheriff of the town and he needs to kind of be like, okay, I just had you in a jail cell for murder. So what are you doing out, and why aren't any of you people listening to me?
Plus, your friend just insulted me. And actually, you have to admit, it worked. He poured the beer on his crotch, and even his wife later on was like, what happened? So,
did you pee on yourself again?
So, you guys have any thoughts about Kelly's behavior?
I think Kelly has gained a certain measure of confidence, because mm-hmm. by branching out and hanging out with Ruby, those two are like two peas in a pod now. The way they handed off the gun, she was like, here you go, it's hot, you know, and there's... Like, that was, whenever Kelly had the gun, she never pointed it at Ruby, and vice versa. But
there's mm-hmm. confidence, and then there's cocky. And I think she's kind of gone over into cocky. And I think that whole people telling her you need to be a leader, all this stuff, deadites telling her that's affecting her.
That could be starting to go to her head, make her make mistakes.
Yeah, eventually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But then again, she's been hanging out with Ash, who's a cocky bastard, too.
Who so it could be it,
yeah. Who could be an bad influence, you know? So maybe she's just a product of her environment right now.
Could be.
So the lights flicker, and Margie's skin gets thrown at Ash. And this is where Em got her metal mic quote of the week. So he starts, you know, like, what's going on here? What is this? And he throws it off to the side. And Emery, now with zero chance of making detective, thinks that Ash did it. Somehow, somehow he believes that a guy who was standing there and had a whole skin of a person thrown at them somehow did that.
He wants it to be Ash.
Oh, yeah.
Granted. Yeah. Yeah. But I think he just wants to point the gun, too. He does want it to be Ash, but he's just like, all right, now I got you, asshole. So finally, Ruby comes in and says she has enough of this crap. And she disarms him pretty handily. And she says, it's not Ash, which should be fucking obvious, is what I have in my notes. She tells Deputy Polly to go get any prisoners and to have everyone in plain sight. And then we get a bit of exposition from Ruby about who Ball is and how he's working. He could be any one of you. He goes from person to person. He wears their skin. So everybody is suspect right now. But we don't need to be turning on each other because that's what he wants as well, which seems to be like a paradox because at the same time you're being told it could be any person in here, but don't start getting at each other's throats because that's what he wants. It's like, well, how else do you handle that situation?
Yeah, so, you just fed into it.
Lacey knows that demons and haunted cars are real. And only one man is brave enough to stop them. Pablo. You see the way she looked at him?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to have a jealous Kelly on our hands here. Even though
hopefully.
So
the camera never panned to her, so we don't know how she reacted to that whole exchange.
She was a little jealous, just a paquito.
Just a paquito. She needed a little bit of peanut butter to go with that jelly. So at this point, we're playing who is the demon in? And of course, Emery keeps thinking it's Ash, and Ash is just like, clearly the demon is inside of this walking penis. Just give me the gun so I can finish it. And I think this is where Ruby uses the analogy of animals in a cage and tells everybody to just kind of chill. And so Ruby wants to know where the Kandarian dagger is because that's the only thing that's going to save them. Because if Ball is around, that's the only thing that's going to be able to hurt him. So Emery tries the whole thing where I'll just point to where it is instead of telling you where it is. That way I can lunge for the gun. And this is one of my favorite scenes in the whole episode because Ruby just kind of nonchalantly pulls back like, no, you're not getting the gun from me, and then shoots him in the leg for his troubles just to make sure he doesn't pull that crap again, which doesn't even really work because he does it later on. He takes the gun from Kelly. I don't think he would have tried to take it from Ruby again, but you know, he tried to take it from Kelly. But he had that coming. He had that coming. It wasn't a kill shot. Yeah. Well,
he still screwed her over. He didn't give her the password to the
I know, that was a dick move.
Yeah.
So Ruby goes down to the evidence locker for the Kandarian dagger, and she's got the keys in her hands, and she's got them poking out through her fingers, the key claw, you know, just in case anybody comes around the corner. And she sees Polly down there, and she makes Polly enter the code to open the locker. The door locks on Polly as she tries to leave, the door to that section of the jail.
Yeah.
So between the two of those, I didn't think it was going to be her until the kissing started. Yeah, mm-hmm. I thought, oh, it's got to be in somebody else because there's this scared woman down there.
Exactly. I thought it was one of the top two. I thought they were going to make the girlfriend or the wife be Ball, have a little fun with it, but they didn't.
What were we going to say?
That was some passionate kissing.
Yeah, Ball's into his Ruby, mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That scene was pretty ballsy. So upstairs, Pablo has got a problemo. It looks like something is trying to get out of him. And so the room starts to get ugly as everyone is turning on each other. And, you know, Pablo doesn't know if it's him or not. So he honestly can't. He thinks in his mind that he's Ball. He thinks that's what this manifestation is. But everybody starts snipping at each other. And Joni's like, yeah, well, this guy looks skeevy over here. And then Chet, who I had liked up until this point, says, well, what do we know about this Mexican? Right. Uh-huh. And then Pablo comes, or of course, Ash is like, hey, he's not Mexican. He's Pablo the Mexican. And then one of the best lines that could have been a Metal Mike quote of the week is, oh, you mean like Chet, the dumbass white guy? Oh, but that crosses the line. So
I know.
Of course, Ash has to be like, oh, that's a little racist, Pablo. You need to apologize.
It's genius that they're playing with all this and just making jokes out of it, you know, mm-hmm. Kind of like the old Archie Bunker show, All in the Family. You know, it's like racism done right, to where the people doing it just look ignorant as fuck. It's nice.
So I have to give credit to the writers. Racism done right. I like that. That's a good hashtag. Racism done right. You know what I mean? So the people look bad while they're doing it.
Exactly.
It's hard to take an ensemble cast like that, like have all of these people inside of a confined room and give each of them enough of something to say that it actually contributes and drives the story forward. That's a difficult task. So much credit to the writers for doing this.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And there's a good callback to a couple of episodes ago, because as things heat up, Kelly tells Emery to cool it or she'll pop him one for real this time, in reference to the pop machine. So Emery talks about Amber's decapitation, and then everybody kind of gets that ashy slashy vibe and pulls back a little bit. And then Ash, trying to make it better, somehow makes it even worse, which is, you know, within his repertoire of skills for sure. But he talks about making out with Linda in the wrong vehicles several times, and she's just getting frustrated and fed up. And then Chet wants to get out of Dodge, so Kelly has to tell Numbnuts to back off. And once again, I'll comment on this one more time, and then I'll just, you know, let the viewer decide. But it's one of the better scenes I've ever seen, where you have a bunch of people in a room and you all have to give them a speaking role, with the exception of the crazy homeless guy who really doesn't say anything.
No.
So everybody's quibbling, and only Pablo's agony stops them, because he starts going over, like, he's just, something bad is happening to this kid. So back downstairs, Polly Ball seduces Ruby, and she pulls away the Polly mask to reveal his true self. And this is where you finally get a good look at him, bloody and all. But then he does his cool little demon trick where, he, you know, the lights go out and they come back on and he's wearing a black suit.
I just don't understand why she just didn't stab him. I mean, how long does it take for him to take that skin off? It was like a montage of him, like, ripping skin off.
Yeah,
fear will make you slow down, though. It's the one thing Ruby's scared of. Like, anything else, she's not scared. He calls her out on it. He's like, that's one of the gnarliest superpowers you could have, is cause fear. People freeze up.
She's freezing up, or maybe he's doing some sort of seductive power or something to prevent her from doing it.
I would have to assume that, because you're absolutely right. While he's coming out of that, it's a good scene that you need to show the audience, not just for the gross factor, but to kind of show this is his real entrance into the show, even though you saw him earlier with Margie.
Yeah.
But that would have been the time to attack, because she had the dagger in her possession then, you know, before he just took it away, like taking candy from a baby.
But it's a horror show, you know. There's always got to be something you're screaming at the TV about.
Yeah, you can't kill the big bad, like, after he's been introduced, right? Not immediately.
We only have 5 episodes.
So he's referring to his children. He says, "You murdered them. You betrayed me." And then he lets her know that, "I know you're immortal, and you're going to die slowly, just like all these other mortal maggots." So he taunts her and messes with her a little bit, and then finally knocks her out and just leaves her there. So he doesn't have an interest in killing her yet. He wants her to be well aware of all the nasty stuff he's going to do. He's going to break the Hefe, and then he's going to burn the world down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he's going to accomplish either one of those two things. If Ash isn't broken yet,
right?
There's something about him. He is the chosen one, because somebody as completely inept and incompetent as he is as as a person would have like walked into a bus by now. So,
oh, for sure.
None of us guys in real life can be that bad at
stuff.
Oh,
no.
We would just die. So he leaves by saying, "Got a scat, alley cat." So Pablo can feel it spreading all over his body, whatever it is. So Kelly looks for some painkillers, and this is when Emery grabs the gun. And then he's going into full dick mode, and he thinks that Ball is in Pablo, and Pablo can't give him a straight no. He's like, "I don't know, to be honest with you. I'm not sure if he is or not." So he's ready to blow him away. And this actually produced a true moment of dramatic tension for me, because I don't know where this show is going to go. And I feel like Kelly and Pablo are relatively safe as characters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I thought Pablo was going to get shot at this point. Thereby like complicating things more, because Emery just has that much douchebaggishness in him, and he's crazy, and Ball's whispering in his ear. So I thought it was going to happen. I don't know about you guys.
No, I totally did too, man.
So almost everybody else in the room is trying to stop him, and this is when Ball's whispering, you know, the encouragement. And his wife tries to stop him, and he turns around and he's like, "Don't you ever shut the fuck up." It's like, oh.
I know.
You can't say that to your wife.
Nope.
That's never, you can't, yeah. Wrong,
that's
move.
Bad. Yep.
So Ash tackles Emery onto a desk, and a dollop of blood appears on his head, and they both kind of look up towards the ceiling. And this is when the deadite meat body lady cop drops from the ceiling and throws Ash into a copy machine for a pretty good gag with the aforementioned Xerox of his face several times. I'd like to get one of those and frame it. You know, if they you could buy
I'm
one
sure
from the actual
set. I'm
sure
we could find it online.
Yeah. You don't have to pay for it. Yeah.
Nah, whatever.
So Ball shows up in the physical form, but I'm wondering if it's they just do that to let us as the viewer know that his influence is there. Because he doesn't stay solidified and mingle with the crowd. He's just directing the meat puppets, so to speak.
The puppet.
So the deadite Margie kills Joni and tosses her arm at crazy homeless guy. And we knew Joni was going to be expendable because no one cares about this character. I figured the crazy homeless guy would die too.
I thought he was going to go first, to be honest with you.
We got to find out why he's pissed at Ash, why he said Ash ruined his life. We still have to find that out.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
It needs to get specific, like he says. Like, you need to be more specific. I've ruined a lot of people's lives.
That's a good point.
I was going to say that the deadite Margie disarms Joni, but that just seemed...
You should have.
I just did. Son of a bitch. So Ash finds Linda, who has disappeared somehow into a cell. I'm guessing Ball just transported her there or drug her down, however it happened. And this is probably the best scene in the whole episode, where Meat Body Marge starts just thrashing Ash, just throwing him up against the cell. I mean, he's not even getting any hits in this fight.
No, she's fucking him up. Well, you got to think she'd be all slippery, just meat and muscle, and there's nothing you could grab onto it, because you know it's still a lot of blood. It'd just be a slippery mess.
Yeah.
Nasty.
She's like Frank from Hellraiser before he gets all of his skin back.
Slimy mesentery or whatever that coating is around muscles.
Ugh. Like the silver skin.
Yeah.
So Emery comes down the hallway and this thing turns and roars at him, and he just screams like he doesn't have a pair at all. Just
You believe? See, Ash should just be like, "You believe me now, motherfucker."
That's why I didn't chime in, but I didn't ever think he was going to shoot Pablo. I think he's just a very frightened man.
Just scared.
Yeah,
it could be
like how frightened and insecure people tend to overcompensate for stuff by.
But sometimes they're more dangerous, and so I could see why you guys would think he would shoot. But I never got that impression. I thought Pablo was okay.
I didn't feel it for very long, but there was a point, especially on first viewing. Well, obviously, when you watch it the second time, you already know what's going to happen. Duh. But the first time I saw it, there was a very small period of time where I was like, oh, shit. So after this scream, Ruby kicks Ash's chainsaw and uses his boomstick to blast the head away, splattering everybody in blood. And they did it.
Especially Ash.
Yeah, they did it great because everything stopped when that happened. He's just like, ah. You know, because I mean, everybody, the three main characters get covered in blood pretty much 99% of the time, almost every single episode they get covered in. I think Kelly might have missed out on it this episode, maybe Pablo too, because they're, you know, on the other side of the jail.
Yeah, but he belched up some bile. So
Pablo did not escape the nasty bodily fluids by a long shot, but it wasn't, you know, so.
And the good thing, well, and he's getting the makeup done. So he's at least in the makeup tent.
Did you notice Sheriff Emery kind of behind and a little bit to the side of Ruby after she shoots, and he's like crouched up against the wall, and he has his eyes closed like, this did not just happen to me. I did not just get splattered in blood. So Ash picks up the chainsaw and tells Linda, I'm going to get you out of here no matter how long it takes. And he starts sawing at the blade, or I'm sorry, he starts sawing at the bars of the jail cell.
Oh,
and
shit.
Ruby's like, Ash, catch. And dumbass. So we get our first little slapstick moment. And so then Emery runs in the cell and tries to apologize to his wife. And she says, it's over. It's done.
Something's been going on, I think, for a while in this relationship.
Yeah, it would have to, but then, you know, to see how he was behaving, it would be hard to see somebody treat you like that and then also see how they're treating other people.
Exactly.
And even the way he talked to his daughter, where Kelly had to lay off her about his own daughter.
Yeah, Kelly had to say that about his daughter, and then Ash had to tell him to lay off her. You know, and there was a few, she was like the model of patience the first couple of times it happened because yeah. she's just like, look, you're hurt, you're scared, you don't know what's going on, I understand, but don't talk to me like this. And then he's just like, shut the fuck up. You know, so you're not,
dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, you're not going to have an unlimited amount of patience. As they exit the cell, Linda beams her head on the door, straight up Three Stooges style. It was unexpected, and it cracked me up the first time I saw it, and I still get a laugh out of it every time I watch it afterwards.
Yeah, because you just don't expect it from her, like you said.
This is what I mean when I say that the show plays in its zone and it plays good, because mm-hmm. it's committed to this goofiness. No matter how serious a thing is going on, they're always going to insert this dumb shit into there. And the dumb shit, I mean, in the nicest way possible.
I hope I hope she has a big ass knot on her head next episode.
It would be realistic, but, you know.
Like one from the cartoons, the big like red one.
A shiner.
With a little cartoon bird swirling around her head.
So they hear Pablo down the corridor, who is not having a good time. He's puking and convulsing. And what I believe to be the Necronomicon seems to be taking over his body, or at least trying to push through his body at some point. So now he's convinced that he's Ball. And Ruby's like, no, Pablo, you're not Ball. You're the one who's going to help us, or you're the one who's going to save us from Ball. Now, does it mean, I don't want to speculate too far because I was completely wrong at the other episode when I, you know, when he threw the Necronomicon into the hell dimension. I was like, okay, I think his tie with it is severed, you know, that was completely wrong.
There's a few things that worry me about this, right? So, the Necronomicon could be coming through him. Maybe he'll get the Necronomicon tattooed all over his body. Maybe he turns into the new Necronomicon, which would be the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
You know, they use his skin for the pages, his blood for the writing, and his face for the book. Yeah. It's possible. I mean, who knows how it could come through. We know why Ball wants him now. Remember when that vision he had him chained up? He could be wanting whatever spell's getting put on his belly or whatever's going on with him.
Well, last episode, he got into the trunk during that dream. And at the end of the episode, they throw the book into the trunk. And there's already been made mention about how he's not actually the father of those kids. Ball is.
Mm-hmm.
He was just the vagina. What if he's a hell vagina?
Oh. That'd be funny.
So what if he is what they threw the book into? So the book was thrown into him. And so he's some sort of like vortex.
Like
himself.
A gate?
Yeah, he's a gateway.
Fuck. It just doesn't sound good for our boy Pablo. In none of these scenarios sound good.
No,
poor
it
guy.
Doesn't. It doesn't look good for him. But
now what Paul was saying about, you know, I like that about him being the book. His blood is the pages of skin and then inked in. Or I'm sorry, his flesh is the pages and then his blood is the ink. And then his face will be the new face on the book. I don't think they're going to do that necessarily because they're not going to get rid of Pablo. But having a vision where that happens would be totally awesome.
Yeah.
You just have a side vision where that happens. I was wrong about the connection being severed between them. So I could be just as wrong about this. But I'm hoping that, you know, I feel like Pablo in the book shared a little moment there when it belched up its word and he read it, you know, and sent mm-hmm. the book back and said, you know, I don't know how much the book is a tool, right? So whoever's using it is doing it towards their own end. And like I've mentioned before, Spinach Chin did a good thing and sent Ash back to his own time with it. So it's kind of like television. You can use it for crappy reality TV or you can use it for something great like this. So having said that or established that, maybe, just maybe, the book is their key to actually getting rid of Ball. And
for sure,
the book is going to become somewhat like symbiotic with Pablo. But if it tries to take over and they can't, like, you know, separate themselves, that would be bad too.
Yeah, but I just don't see how this works out for Pablo. I mean, that looked pretty gnarly what was happening to him. So maybe we do lose him this season.
You're always looking for that to happen.
we need one of the two to go.
No, we don't.
It's getting to the point to where I don't fear for them. A second I did with the gun, but one of them just has to get it. I don't want to see either of them go, but you don't want it to be to where you're just never afraid for them. It's a horror movie. It's essentially a long horror movie.
It's a
People
silly,
gotta die.
It's a silly horror movie that doesn't feel, I know.
Like Ash said, all of his friends get it at one point or another. Maybe that was a setup for this season. Someone's got to die.
Maybe. You could be correct about that. I don't want to believe it, though.
And Pablo would tug at the heartstrings.
Yes, he would.
He would die for his friends. And it would be the worst possible scenario, but it would be really effective.
I don't want to contemplate it. I just don't want to think about it. Well, that's the end of that episode. So,
all right. So we want to remind everybody, if you have been listening to this podcast and enjoying it and you haven't yet made it over to iTunes to write us a review, this is a good time to go do it.
It directs traffic to us. The more reviews we get, the more eyeballs and ears that we're going to get on our podcast. And that helps us out in the long run. And it helps you out in the long run, too, because if you want us to produce more content, we need that kind of boost. So please, 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 if you like us, head on over to iTunes and give us a review. If you don't want to leave any, if you don't feel descriptive or particularly articulate, you don't have to write anything. You can just leave some stars. 5 would be great, but, you know, be honest. No, seriously, 5 stars.
Yeah. And, you know, we're going to do the contest again for a t-shirt. It's a Deadeye Bites t-shirt with No Ship Network on the back. I might have made a piece, you know, so if we see the turnout, you know, I really want to see like at least 5 to 10 new reviews, and then we'll give away some prizes like we always do.
You want one of these t-shirts. Trust me. I just spent 3 hours giving out candy to people on Halloween, and I got a lot of compliments on the t-shirt. People were like, cool, I like your t-shirt. So
nice.
It's a hit. You can actually see pictures of me wearing the t-shirt on Facebook and Twitter. You don't have to look at my face if you don't want to. Just look at the t-shirt. That's what we're, you know.
I think that was it.
They're pretty sweet.
If anybody wants to write in feedback, head to our website at noship.net. You can click on our contact page, and it will direct you to the various ways that you can reach us. You can also find out what other shows we cover. I can actually list them right now. We cover Vikings, Twin Peaks, Penny Dreadful, Ash vs. Evil Dead, and Spartacus.
And if you've been wanting to write feedback, but you've been a little hesitant for one reason or another, do it. It's as fun as you think it is to join in on the conversation. We read what you say. You know, it gets to be talked about. And then other people sometimes will comment writing about what you said. And then it makes the whole conversation just bigger and more fun. So,
all right, we got one piece of feedback today. We have Polearm writing in, and he says, like this episode, they did a lot of new things. We finally got to meet Ball, and he isn't as demonic looking as I expected. We learned why, in part, Ruby isn't working with the other bad guys. Apparently, at some point, she lost her immortality and is aging like a human. Is it just me, or does Ruby always leave out crucial information that leads to misunderstandings?
Yes.
Yes, mm-hmm. She does. Like Ball jumping from person to person sounds like a description of the spirit of a Deadeye or Elegos, right? When in reality, he perfectly skins people and wears their skin like a meat suit from the Will Smith movie, Men in Black. That was something new. I also liked how the horror element was a little closer to the surface in this episode. I think Evil Dead is always at its best when it's on that thin line of making you laugh or scream, a line I feel was mostly lost this season except for a few scenes. Plus, best Deadeye of the week or monster of the week is this skinless zombie with normal human eyes thing. Seriously, that thing was more disturbing, emphasis or horror scary than anything else this year so far. Somehow she was still alive as she was just after Ball skinned the blonde lady cop. That was disturbing. Human's eyes instead, no eyes or demon ones, increased the horror factor. Plus, it was nice to see some new monster type for them to work with. I wonder how it was being controlled because it didn't seem to act like a Deadeye, more like a killing machine. Well, Ball was probably a puppet master there.
Oh, for sure. You know, you have to give the special effects guys a lot of credit. Like not the CG, but just the regular makeup guys. They've really gone all out this season. With the body hat, they always got skin suits and skinned people. Because, I mean, it'd be the most difficult thing to do would be to skin a human and have everything anatomically correct. You know, like a monster, you can kind of mishmash, throw some shit here or there. Those look like something out of a textbook.
It did. I mean, even when he peeled the skin the first time, I mean, that looked realistic to me.
So if you watch, I don't know if it's on all platforms or whatever, but where we watch it from Stars on our Kindle thing or Fire Stick or whatever it's called, they always have a little 5-minute section afterwards where they kind of go into some of the special effects, and they said that they just found the skinniest actor that they had available to them, mm-hmm. and then they build the suit on top of that person.
Oh, so that would be so hot.
So yeah, so they end up like
not in the sexy way.
Yeah, not in the sexy time way. So they end up looking like, you know, the body size of a normal person, but they've got all these layers of stuff over them of the fake meat and everything.
That's amazing.
And they showed
like
the
600 degrees.
Oh yeah, you have to like take your breaks between shoots and like a
yeah, you better get cooler. It in one or two.
And they show the scene where Ash is chainsawing the one, you know, Margie down the middle, and they've got people on either side holding it, you know, kind of ripping it apart as the chainsaw is going down, that, you know, that are directly off screen or just blocked, you know, whited out by CGI or however they do that.
Nice.
Movie magic. And I meant to mention at that time, that's kind of like a little bit of a replay of when he was in the shed with Linda. Remember, I think in Evil Dead 2, if I'm not mistaken, where it's the deadite's going crazy with the chainsaw in it, and it's going back and forth, and it looks all herky jerky and stuff
and
like that.
The chainsaw lands on herself, like she accidentally chainsaws herself, you mean?
I think so, yeah. Because when he has her head in the vise and stuff like that, and she's talking to him.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I have to make a correction. On the last podcast, I had said that MAM means mammary gland, or that it originates from the word mammary gland. So now MAM is actually from the word madam. Kevin S. wrote on Twitter and mentioned that he thought it was that, and I looked up, that's correct. It's actually MAM as in MAM, which also means mom, which the word mom and mommy actually come from mammary gland. So,
oh, I didn't know that.
Think about that the next time you call your mother.
Great. Now I'm going to be looking at my mom's tits. I'm just kidding.
I just call my mom and be like, what's up, tits? What's going on? What's she doing?
Yeah, I don't want to get slapped.
Got to say it in Dennis Hopper's voice.
Mommy.
Oh, Jesus. Thank you, Polearm, for writing in. You're the only one who wrote in tonight. We need more feedback. Come on. I know you guys want to do it.
It's Halloween festivities.
Yeah.
You got things going on Fridays. You got things going on Saturdays. People are running around taking their kids to like a trick or trunk or certain neighborhoods. And then we finally get it on Monday, you know, so they had the whole weekend. I heard churches were doing stuff. Then you've got the haunted houses and mazes. Mm-hmm. And our listeners, our horror fans, they're going to be out doing horror stuff.
Heck yeah.
So we'll give them a mulligan only this week, though, fuckers. Only this week.
I podcasted tonight in my Freddy Krueger sweater.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It is Halloween tonight.
She did.
Yep.
I know. It's awesome.
Horror business. 1, 2.
All right. So that's it for tonight's podcast. We will talk to you next time. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Happy All Saints Day.
Happy All Saints Day.
It's Samhain tomorrow. So that'll be fun for everybody who doesn't know about the pagan holiday. It's fine though. It's okay. I don't expect anyone. Just have fun. Just know that it's a holiday and have fun.
All right. I am your host, Em.
I'm your host, Steve.
And I'm your host, Paul.
Don't be dicks.